Hello, hello, and welcome back. It is the Temple of Swan for our 900th edition here today at Dominican Radio, radio.dominican.edu. I'm already messing up. How are you feeling today, Swanee?
Long day. Feeling good, though. A little bit tired. A little bit goofy.
A little bit tired and goofy.
I will admit, I'm a little bit goofy right now.
Doesn't that always make for a better show?
It does.
What do we got on the slate? Just off the top of your head.
I say A's and Giants ball. We'll get into that. And we're going to discuss replay. The use of baseball, how it's been implemented in this season. We've seen a lot of it. And we'll give you our opinion on it. Because we got a strong opinion on it. You're listening to radio.dominican.edu. This is the Temple of Swan.
And this is the Temple of Swan. And like you said, Alex, we're going to talk a lot of baseball since opening weekend has now finished. And now we're on to opening week. Giants just took their third win of the early season, beating the Diamondbacks in comeback fashion again.
Huge win.
Yeah, now 3-1. The Giants look pretty good. They're doing it on the offensive side.
They are.
Scoring a lot of runs against the Diamondbacks.
Only pitcher to really shut the D-backs down has been Hudson, the newcomer. It's been nice, but it's good to see some offense in that Giants lineup.
And one of the guys that really sticks out to me has been Brandon Belt with 3 home runs in the first 4 games. Didn't know Brandon Belt was more of a power guy, but early on in the season, he's showing that he's got some pop to that bat.
Shortened up his swing throughout the second half of the season last year. Worked on it in spring training. Usually, a hitter can try to keep getting out those flaws. He did. It looks like he's got a level swing now. No more loop in it. And like you said, he's gone yardy 3 times, including today.
And the Giants are 3-1, opened up the season with a comeback win over the Diamondbacks 9-8, then lost 5-4 in a game which Matt Cain pitched pretty well. They lost it late, though, with the bullpen struggles. Then they came back to win 2-0 with the Hudson Gem, and then today won 8-5 in comeback fashion.
I'm worried about the bullpen, though. That's the area of concern and the question mark that they have. We were both watching a little bit of the game, especially because with Cain, fantasy purposes, for all you fantasy nuts out there. But we needed Cain to get that win for the bullpen to lock it down. They were up 1, and they couldn't do it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he pitched 5 good innings. Wasn't his best work, but he left with the lead, so you expect him to get the W. Then the first guy out of the bullpen comes in, gets rocked for 2 runs.
Yeah, Gutierrez.
Gutierrez, that's his name. I didn't want to butcher his name. And then they lost that game by the final of 5-4, which is their only loss right now on the season. So a very good first series. They went on the road to Arizona and took 3 out of 4. Now they got the hated Dodgers on the road for the next 3 in what seems to be a huge series, which Game 3 be on ESPN. That should be an interesting one.
Yeah, and you go on the road, you take 3, but you could easily go into LA town and lose 2 out of 3 or potentially get swept. They better continue the momentum. They don't play too well in LA, but it's going to be one heck of a series, like you said.
And the probables for that series are Vogelsong getting his first start against Ryu, then Bumgarner looking to bounce back against Mahalem, and Kaner versus Greinke in the final game, which is on ESPN.
And we were talking about this. We'll talk a little bit Dodger baseball just briefly, but Kershaw, the issue with Kershaw's back.
And it could
What do you think?
It could be lingering, too. A back injury couldn't be pretty serious for pitchers because they can't follow through or do anything that they're normally used to. And if Kershaw's been scratched, they keep pushing back the timetable of his return. Now he's back down to 3 weeks, and he's going to be on a light pitching regimen. The longer they keep pushing it back, the scarier it gets for Kershaw, who just signed a huge deal with the Dodgers. And they did have a good pitching staff before that. They had Kershaw, Ryu, Greinke. Those are very good 3 there with Herron and Ethan Mahalem rounding out the final 5. Very good pitching staff, but when you lose an ace like Kershaw, who's arguably one of the best players in baseball, that's of course going to hurt your team. So the Giants have got to cash in early when they get all these NL West games because they have a full slate of them. They're going to have the Dodgers coming back home in 2 weeks. So they got to make sure they're taking advantage of the Dodgers when Kershaw's not healthy.
I agree. And Kershaw eats the Giants up for dinner, lunch,
and
breakfast.
He eats everyone up.
Yeah. We were talking probably the best lefty in baseball.
Yeah.
So we'll see. That's a big, big concern right now.
And Ryu's doing a very good job at the top, trying to hold over till Kershaw gets back. But it can only be so long before the loss of Kershaw really plays its toll on the Dodgers pitching staff and the Dodgers team. But the one thing the Dodgers are very good at is scoring runs. They got Puig. They got a very good lineup with Hanley, Gonzalez. You can just name out guys. Crawford.
Crawford's been nice up top.
Yeah. So
once they get Kemp back, that will be even more dangerous.
It's going to be a big test for the Giants pitching staff to come back down to L.A. in a rivalry game, which everyone will be watching, and then try to take the series. Because I think that's the main goal. You got to take 2 out of 3.
I agree. I think taking series throughout seasons is how you become a playoff team. Moderately winning series, or if you can't, and you split the last one, say 4-game series, you lose 2 out of 3, you split the fourth. Not getting the majority, 3 out of 4, 2 out of 3, dropping those series, you're looking good. And I think teams hit those stretches where the Dodgers, for instance, last year, going 41-8, they were just winning series left and right. So, yeah, you're right. Giants got to take advantage early.
Rivalry. Yeah, and one thing that's going to be important for the Giants kicking off that series against the Dodgers is that first matchup with Vogelsong. Really expect for him to have a bounce-back year. He pitched horribly last year, got hurt. This is an important year. He signed a 1-year contract with the Giants, and he's kind of on the borderline of still being in that rotation. He's the number 5 guy. They don't have too much faith in him. What are your opinions on Vogelsong?
He didn't look good in spring, which worried me. And he's getting up there in age, and he's only got location, location, location. And we'll see how his velocity is. If it's around 92, 93, that's okay. That's Vogie. If it's dipping down 90, maybe 89, there's no way that you can pitch the way Vogie pitches and be successful. In that number 5 spot, he might not stay there when we see it come All-Star break or later in the season. If he becomes Vogie of 2011, 2010, then he'll be straight. He'll be okay. That's a normal Vogelsong. But this is a year where he's out to prove himself, because if he doesn't, he might not have a job next year with any team.
Yeah, and that I couldn't have said it better myself. Let's talk a little bit about the game today that we got to watch, since it was a day game, as is the getaway day for all teams around Major League Baseball. The Diamondbacks won 5. This was a huge game for them. If they could have won, they would have been 2-4. Huge game for them against the Giants, who are rivals in the NLS as well. Giants down 3-5 going into the 8th, and they get a huge hit from Crawford to start the inning. And then talk about Michael Morse, who got the pinch hit. Comes in 2 outs, guys on 1st and 2nd. Beautiful curveball, almost hit the dirt, that Morse dug out, shoved at the middle for the game-tying RBI.
That set the tone. And how about Hector Sanchez's rake into the corner to set up Morse? Got himself on 2nd, pinch hit, or pinch run. Juan Perez comes in, bang, like you said, Morse takes that curve up the middle. Quick question before we get to the Pagan, Homer. When you see an off-speed pitch as a hitter, what's your first instinct? To go up the middle?
Yeah, either go up the middle or go opposite field, because if you try to pull it, you're going to be way ahead of it. You're going to be off balance, going to be on your front foot. The main thing with off-speed pitches is to really serve it the other way, because that's what you want to do as a hitter. That's taking away the changeup or curveball that the pitcher has. If you try to pull it and think, oh, this is such a fat pitch because it's only 70 miles per hour, you're going to pull your shoulder out. All your weight's going to be to your front foot, and you're going to ground out to the third baseman. But Michael Morse did it today. He's a good power hitter. Saw that curveball, shoved it up the middle, beautiful single, and he got the game-tying RBI. And I think the big part of that at-bat was that first curveball he threw. He's down. The pitcher is down 2-0 in the count. He throws a get-it-over curveball, which showed Michael Morse the speed and showed the break. And then he threw the exact same pitch, a little bit lower, better a pitch for the pitcher, but Michael Morse just saw it, and that's why he shoved it up the middle for a single. I think that was the huge pitch they at-bat, was that 2-0 pitch that he got over. Decided to come back with a 2-1 and tied the game.
I agree. I can understand the pitch count. He didn't want to go with a get-it-in fastball 2-0. Brought the off-speed. And he tried to fool him again, goes back to the off-speed, down by the knees. Decent pitch, better hitting.
Yeah.
That set up runners on first and second for Pagan. And
you called this too. You were like, first pitch fastball, I'd smack it. And what does he get? Hanging fastball at the letters, and Pagan absolutely raked it to the deepest part of the field, right center, bombed, almost got into the pool for the Diamondbacks, and that was the game-winning hit as they moved on to win 8-5. Pagan's having a nice little start to the season.
He is, and we're going to bring up that fantasy implication again. He is on our fantasy team, and he has helped it out big time, but I don't want to compare him to Coco, because Coco is the man, and he's the train and the horse up top for Oakland, but you saw this team last year with no Pagan, and it struggles with Pagan up top, leading off, just a different ball club, not only offensively, but defensively. Had a nice diving catch yesterday in last night's outing, but that's a huge two-out, three-run bomb to open up a three-run lead for the Giants that won it and allowed them to take 3 out of 4.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Pagan, like you said, no one really notices his defense, but he's a very good defensive player. He stops runs. He's a run saver in the outfield. He'll cut down doubles to singles. Very good on the defensive side, and that's why I think the Giants struggled last year. Was the injury to Scudero didn't help them at all either, but Pagan was probably the main piece. You're losing that guy at the top of your order who you can pencil in 160 games a year, who can get you stolen bases, get on base, make things happen, put pressure on the defense. That's what the Giants were missing last year. They got him back. They're off to a great start at 3-1, and they move the Diamondbacks to 1-5, who many writers thought that the Diamondbacks would push to be either the second or best team in the NL West this year.
Including me. I thought when we saw the D-backs opening lineup against the Dodgers, it looked promising. Trumbo did go yard today, and I don't know if the pitching's going to be there for the D-backs. The hitting will certainly be there, but their pen didn't look too strong.
Yeah, and the loss of Corbin up top hurts them as well.
That's
to Tommy
huge.
John. That makes their starting rotation even thinner. I mean, Bronson Arroyo was brought over, but he's not going to be a number 2-3 guy for the Diamondbacks this year. That they want him to be, at least. He's going to be the 2-3 guy, but not that's going to help them in that spot. And the Diamondbacks struggling early. It is only 6 games in the season, so we can't have type of, they're not going to be anything this year. Because they could definitely put on a run like the Dodgers did last year.
Easily. This is just complete beginning of the season.
But just off the first 6 games we've seen, the Diamondbacks have struggled to pitch. And that bullpen was really, really tarnished in the series against the Dodgers and then coming over to the Giants. The Giants hit the bullpen really well. I mean, they hit the starters good too, but the bullpen was where the flaws were shown in the Diamondbacks, like you said.
It did. And D-backs had this series. They gave up the first game. They jumped out to a big lead. And they gave up this game. They had this one in control. Giants gave up last night's outing. But it comes down to bullpen. And we're about to get into Across the Bay bullpen, because I know Mr. Temple's got some opinions about the closing situation
with
Oakland.
Since we're jumping over to the A's, who are 1-2 now, they've lost 2 games with Jim Johnson taking both losses. Got the blown save last night in a game that really they should have won. They were up the whole game. Really annoying game to watch as a fan, because they were up 2-0, then they tied 2-2, went up 4-2, tied 4-4, went up 5-4, lost 7-5. It was something like that. They lost by 2 runs because Jim Johnson gave up 3 in the last inning. But anyways, they're struggling right now, closing out games. But I don't think it's to say that's Jim Johnson's fault. He's not pitching good early, which, I mean, it's hard to pitch when your fans boo you when you throw a ball. I mean, I don't like the way that the fans were treating Jim Johnson. Yeah, I know that they missed Grant Balfour, who was like their cult hero. But we got a new closer now. We've got to move on. You got to give him the support that he needs. He's a ground ball pitcher. Things are going to happen. He's going to lose a lot of games because of being a ground ball pitcher. You usually don't see that as a closer. You like your closers to be strikeout pitchers and get guys out with their fastball. But Jim Johnson's not that guy. He's a sinker pitcher. He's going to try to get ground balls. And early on, they found holes. The Indians did a very good job of hitting him.
And they have done that in the past.
Yeah.
In recent
history. Yeah, it sucks that the A's have lost 2 games and both of them have come to Jim Johnson, but I don't think it's time yet to relinquish his closer status, and Bob Melvin said the same thing. The Indians did a better job hitting than Jim Johnson did pitching, if that makes sense. Jim Johnson was making the pitches he wanted to make, but the Indians were hitting those pitches and making them count, which is the hardest thing. When you're winning the whole game and then you come to your closer, you're up by 2, you expect the game to be over.
You do.
So when Jim Johnson can't close it out, I mean, that's those are the hardest losses to take. But the A's did it last year. They'll lose games like that, and they'll come back even stronger. So I don't think it's going to hurt them as a team. Like we said, it's early in the season. They're just 1-2. But no panic yet from the bullpen. But I think it is, if this keeps happening and Jim Johnson can't close games, then we need to go to someone else, because we have Gregerson, we have Cook coming off the DL, and we have Doolittle, three guys who can easily close games.
What I was going to ask you. Yeah. If Cook comes back from the DL okay, or Doolittle, if this continues to happen, do you make the move?
I think they probably go to bullpen by committee. They don't have a necessary closer, but if we have lefties coming up in the ninth inning, we'll go Doolittle. If they have righties, they can go Cook. Or if they both of them need a rest, then you can go Gregerson. I mean, they have very good, very capable arms at the back end of the bullpen. It's just a matter of getting everyone together, making sure we're in mid-season form, because right now we're only three games in.
Oh, yeah.
So you can't really expect a lot. I was just upset with the A's fans. I don't really understand it, but I'll be okay with them booing him after the first game, because it's like his first appearance. But you can't, when he comes out for that second game and he threw his first ball, the fans started booing him already. It's like, you can't do that. I wasn't impressed. There was only 12,000 fans there, so I don't think it makes a big difference, but I'm sure you heard.
I'm sure you did too. I want to talk about a bright spot, though, in the day of the first day-night doubleheader, Scott Kazmir.
That's what the A's need. They need Scott Kazmir to be a beast.
What do you think about
year?
Him? He had some nice stuff.
We saw it in the Bay Bridge series against the Giants. That changeup is nasty. That fastball, when he hovers around 89, 90, but we saw him in that game. He'll pump it up to 92, 93 when he needs to get a K. He moved the ball around the corner of the plate very well. Nick Swisher was quoted saying he didn't get anything to hit, which is what you want to do. You want to keep the hitters off balance and make them hit those pitchers' pitches on the corners, on the outside edge. Really, I thought Kazmir looked like an ace in his first appearance against his former team in a huge win, because they needed to get that first win.
I think he's going to have to pitch like it.
Yeah, because he
might be the
number
two guy.
Yeah, he's the number two guy now. Exactly. Because Sonny Gray's young, and we expect him to be the ace in due time. But Scott Kazmir's got to be that staple hole. He's the veteran in the rotation. He's got to make sure that he's pitching every 5 days like he did yesterday in that day one doubleheader. And then on the offensive side of the ball, they're doing a very good job getting leads early. The two games, both of those games, the doubleheader, they got those leads early. They just couldn't hold them in the second one, but the offense is doing a good job striking early. It's just they're not making, like, they'll get one run an inning, but then they'll leave guys on second and third with two outs. They've got to do a better job like the Giants. They scored 17 runs in this series with two outs. The A's aren't scoring runs with two outs. They might score one, but then they're not cashing in even more to really put the knife in the coffin. I don't want to say that. I was going to say the neck.
Break that game
exactly.
Open.
You got to break the game open. They did it in the first one, scoring six, only allowing one, but the second game, they left bases loaded too many times. Derek Norris was a problem with that. He had two chances with guys on second and third, and he grounded out both times. You cannot leave guys on base.
You think it's only a matter of time before they get out of that funk?
Yeah, I think so. I hope so. I mean,
because that team's too good to not be
having
timely hits with two outs.
And it's all dependent upon the middle of that order. Reddick and Cespedes, they've got to have bounce-back years. Right now, they're not really showing too much. Reddick striking out way too much. He's missing fastballs.
Which is
right,
weird.
Yeah, he's missing fastballs right down the plate.
He was on it in spring training.
I agree. I don't know what's happening with him. And Cespedes will have one nice hit a game, but you expect your number four and five guys to really produce, especially with runners on. Coco didn't play in the second game. They went to Sam Fold, who I thought had Sam Fold had a really nice game. Leadoff triple. He had a double in that game as well. I think he's playing really well as the fourth outfielder till Gentry gets back. It's just a matter of putting everything together for the A's.
This team could easily be 3-0.
And they should be. Yeah, exactly.
Don't worry at all.
Yeah, it's just 1-2.
Let's talk about it a little bit tonight. Mariners coming in who just waxed the Angels.
In all three games. None of those games were close. And the Mariners have that revamped lineup with Cano, Corey Hart, Morrison. I mean, they're a new team, if you want to say it that way. And they got
that's a good call. They
got a good bunch of young hitters in Ackley, Smoke, guys who are starting to maybe produce now. So it's going to be key for Jesse Chavez getting his first start this year to really bear down and work off speed effectively. He's got to make sure that the Mariners hitters are off balance, which I think is a key to this game.
I agree, too, because they're on right now. And they got out on the Angels early.
Yeah. Exactly. All those games that they played against the Angels, those three games that they won, they got huge leads early and they were able to coast, not really use those pivotal arms late in the game due to the game being close. They really extended the leads like the A's haven't done yet. So what I look for early is Chavez to maybe throw up three zeros in a row. The A's can get two or three runs. Then really put the Mariners on their back and see how they respond. They're a young team. Let's see how they do trailing for once, because right now they're 3-0 and they've led virtually all 27 innings.
Yeah, it's a perfect recipe, because I don't think that once they get behind, usually it's going to take a couple of those outings to, okay, this is how we got to get grind. This is how we can come back. Get on them early. They're going on the road again. This is their fourth road game in their first four games that they've played. I think Oakland bounces back. They start getting on Seattle. You could have all the talk being, oh, yeah, Seattle starts a season with the sweep of the Angels, and all of a sudden, boom, A's take 3 out of 4 just like that. And now we're all talking about, okay, the Mariners are still the Mariners.
Yeah. The Mariners and Astros are leading the AL West, and I have a feeling that that's not going to last too long.
The tides will turn in a week.
Astros are 2-0 over two big wins over the Yankees, and the Mariners are 3-0. While the Rangers sit at 2-1, and the A's are 1-2, and the Angels 0-3. I don't think that'll last too long. Seattle's coming in for four games against the A's. And like we talked about the Giants, the A's just got to win the series. If they can take 3 out of 4, that's a beautiful performance.
It is.
And they'll start going on the right track to their road games, because then they're going to have, I think, 9 straight road games.
And they could take many.
Yeah.
Who will be the series coming up? I think they play well many. They can get 2 out of 3 there.
The probable pitchers for the A's this series are Chavez, and they're going to Dan Straley, Tommy Malone, Sonny Gray, and Kazmir. And what I found interesting was that they brought up Lindblom to pitch the second game of the doubleheader, and he did a very good job for the A's. He went 4 2/3, gave up 2 runs, just brought a guy up from AAA.
Did you think it was going to be Jesse?
Yeah, I thought they were going to go Jesse, because that's the day he was slated to pitch anyway. So I found it kind of interesting that they brought up Lindblom instead and pushed Jesse back a day. So they're giving all their starters another day's rest. We'll see how that pays off.
I think key game here, Chavez and Straley, they can hold down the fort. But then you're going to have King Felix. If Malone can hang with King Felix and the A's win that game, I think that's a series turn right there. If it's 1-1 or if it's 2-0 and somehow they call in the A's for Seattle and King Felix loses, I think A's could really start pounding the Mariners.
And that's saying a lot, though, because Felix Hernandez has dominated the A's.
That is saying a lot.
Over his whole career. He dominates every team, but especially the A's. I feel like every time Hernandez is on the bump against the A's, it's total domination. It's usually complete game, 4 hits, maybe 1 run if we're lucky. So, I mean, that is a huge game. If Tommy Malone cannot give up the gopher ball, same with Straley. Straley and Malone have got to stay in the park, keep the ball within the yard somewhere. I mean, Odako's a huge stadium, and yet they struggle to keep the ball in the park, so we'll see if they can get that done. But if they can this year, they'll be very good pitchers. They're both young, still learning, so we'll see if they can bounce back and take on Hernandez. One thing I want to talk about before we get our interviews later with the golf people, Sean Kawaguchi and Becky
Rivera.
I couldn't think of the last name. We're going to have two golfers on, bucking the trend of our basketball talk. Do you know a little bit about golf, or what's your knowledge on golf?
I'll be honest to all the listeners. My knowledge on golf is probably not too good. But
you know how to play mini golf.
Oh, mini golf is a new story.
That's what we'll talk to you about.
We'll get some mini golf going, and all of a sudden the competition just turns to a huge, huge battle. I love mini golf. What about you? You love mini golf?
Yeah, I've never actually done a regular golf, like a full 18. Have you ever?
That's a great call. I've never done that either.
But I've done mini golf in my days, and I like to say I'm pretty good.
Have you teed off?
I've done some driving range work.
I have. My game is bad.
My game is
bad. How's yours?
I took it like baseball. So, I mean, it's kind of different, but I think I was too young to really judge about how good my golf game was.
Yeah.
I'd like to go back soon and see how far am I actually driving the ball.
Yeah, and it's not all about a powerful, or I guess it's a lot about a powerful swing, but not as in like a baseball swing.
Yeah, it's a lot of hand-eye coordination technique.
You got to hit the ball squarely on that club.
It's got to be all on the hips. Like what's it, Chubb says from Happy Gilmore.
Yeah.
It's all on the hips.
It is.
We'll have to see. I don't know.
We'll go out and hit some balls one time. And next thing you know,
we should have done that. We should have done that before this interview, so we got a little familiarity.
Yeah.
We'll just talk about mini golf. That'll be our savior. Anyways, I wanted to get into some MLB instant replay talk because this has been bothering me. What are your initial? Because I don't think we've talked about it too much yet. But what are your initial feelings about the expanded replay for MLB?
Initially, when the rule was proposed and passed, I was for it. I was like, okay, this is going to cut down on some missed calls that need to be reviewed. So I was happy about that. However, seeing how this has played out in the first week of baseball, it does take a long time. And this bothers me probably the most, besides the managers just coming out all the time, is it's got to be completely conclusive. There are some outs, and I'm going to bring an example of. There was a pickoff play where Pollock for the D-backs was leaning too far, and Kane picked him off. And Krukenkamp knew he picked him off, and it was very, very close. Very judgmental call, but it was enough to ring him up. The umpire called him safe, and he pulled the he's out safe kind of sign. He wound up to throw to the out sign and waved him safe.
Second-guessed himself.
Next thing you know, Bochy comes out, uses a challenge. Play not conclusive. He looked like he was out. It could have looked like that to the umpires, but it wasn't a definitive out, so he was safe. That runner comes home, and he ends up scoring on another play where he was tagged out sliding to home, which this time he was definitively out. But they since Bochy had already challenged, you can't challenge again. Non-reviewable, play safe, blown call. Two blown calls with an instant replay in Bruce Bochy's pocket. I just don't see this system working as well as I thought it would. What do you think?
I feel the same way. I think the instant replay was good when it was proposed, like you said. And I think all the managers felt that way as well. But what we're seeing in these first couple of games, this first week of baseball games, is really it's flawed. You'll have the manager come out 5 to 6 times per game, really slowing down the slowest sport. Baseball takes 2 to 3 hours per game, and when you're having the manager come out 5 to 6 times to say, oh, did you see that? Should we challenge? Because the manager will come out, walk out the whole way to the umpire, and just see if he should challenge.
And then maybe back out.
Exactly, because the guy from the dugout, whoever's in charge of replay for their team, will say, don't challenge. So he'll come all the way out, have like a minute discussion, get the no sign, then walk all the way back. That's just extending the game even longer.
And Major League Baseball said they vouched not to do that.
Exactly. And the one bad thing about baseball that you hear from all the media people, all the people who don't like baseball, is that it takes too long. They're really lengthening the games with this replay. And like you said, they're not even getting the calls right when they actually do go to replay because of that dumb it has to be conclusive rule. I mean, we all saw the game where it looked like, he was picked off. From my viewpoint, he was picked off, but they couldn't give a 100% answer. Maybe it was 65% that he was picked off. But since it wasn't 100% yes that he was actually picked off, they have to call him safe. They can't overrule the call, which I think is bogus because the whole point of replay is to get the call right.
And they say you want to still leave some judgment to the umpires. Well, let them make a judgmental call.
Yeah.
Because they still miss some when there's not plays being reviewed. And this brings up the point with all the managers, like you said, coming out 5 to 6 times a game. Does baseball go back to just having home runs reviewed? Are they gonna continue this? Because it's gonna happen. They're going to come out, stall, wait till they get the sign.
Exactly. And then
just in case.
Another thing about that is the managers will come out and stall on purpose to get someone in the bullpen even more warm.
So there's another strategy involved with that.
It's really just making the game longer. It's really taking away from the sort of action. And I used to like how umpires had that gut feeling if they'll get the call right or wrong, but they're going to do it on the spot. Now we're going to replay and they're not even getting the call right or wrong. It's just about conclusive or inconclusive evidence supporting their call.
Yeah, I think this was hyped up too much. And I think more and more of the audience that watches baseball throughout the season is going to get a little ticked off. And it's going to happen a few times on Sunday Night Baseball where a national audience is watching. that's going to kind of draw up some concern.
Yeah, and I think that's what it's going to take to really push this replay to the forefront. Because right now, just you have a bunch of local things talking about replay, saying, oh, it's not working. But like you said, once it goes to Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN or a primetime game on whatever it be, TNT or Fox or whatever, and then you see the bad call from the replay, something that can't be overturned because it's inconclusive, then you'll finally get that national talk about, this really isn't working. Why did we spend all the money to put it in? Because they've spent a lot of money to try to upgrade and revamp the replay system.
And you're seeing all these managers come out for, they only have one challenge. So they have to make that absolutely count. And so is it worth that one challenge, that one play to get right, rather than seeing the manager come out five times per game? Or it's not going to happen every game, but there's a lot of close call in baseball, so exactly. they're coming out at least three.
You think of how many times you get a bang-bang play at first. It's got to be two or three times a game. The manager's going to come out 2 to 3 times a game when you look at it like that.
You're going to miss when he would run out.
Exactly, and then you're going to miss ejections now because the umps are going to make calls, and then the managers are just going to say, oh, can you replay that? Now we're not going to see ejections.
That was the passion. They'd sprint out.
Like Buck Showalter would come out and start yelling. I mean, you're not going to see that anymore, which that was also another good point to why.
That was a great
point. It's really taken away from the motivation for managers to really swing a game. Because managers used to do that to really get their team fired up, to get their fans in the game. Now they can't do that. It takes another aspect away from a manager's game.
That's true. I'm going to miss it.
Yeah, because we'll see. It'll be interesting to see what the first manager gets thrown out for. Will it be because of like a play like Bochy had where the guy was out at home but he couldn't review? Maybe that's when a manager will get tossed because he has no more reviews left. But Bochy's kind of even keel as it is.
But if you get your challenge, if it's successful, you get it back.
But we haven't seen too many calls changed.
Yeah.
So far, I think it's just three calls have been changed or reversed, which means three managers have kept their challenges, and the rest have lost them. And you only get one, like you said, and managers are tentative to use them because you only get one.
How about this? I like leaving, out safe up to the umpire. The main concern I have is down the line, fair foul.
Yeah, those
maybe you just
those are
get
tough
that
calls for us to, for ump to see as well.
Yeah, maybe you have just that reviewed, but bang bang plays, maybe you leave it.
Yeah, and
you
I
take
also
it out.
Yeah, I agree with that too. And I also heard another proposal from someone, I think it was on the radio, saying that they should just review calls at the plate. That should just be, you know how the NFL
or
reviews
that,
touchdowns
yeah.
automatically. Every play at the plate is just reviewed automatically.
That's a good proposal, because that's where the run actually counts.
Exactly, because if that would have happened, then the refs, God, I keep saying the refs, I'm thinking football too much. The umps would have easily seen that Kane touched the cleat of Pollock, and that would have been a game-saving out.
It would all work down, yeah. That's a good proposal, too. We'll see what MLB does. They got some thinking
changes,
to do.
Yeah, changes need to be made, and I think we're starting to notice that. I know other people are starting to notice that and write articles saying how it's not really panning out the way that MLB thought it would.
Not at all. And it's just the first week. But the main point was this over of getting the calls correct was they didn't want to delay the game.
And they're
certainly being delayed.
They're taking 3 to 5 minutes per review sometimes, which 3 to 5 minutes doesn't seem like a lot, but when you're watching a baseball game,
that's a long time.
Exactly.
Compared to college and NFL football, the reviews are, they're not. Maybe some are 3 to 5 minutes. Most of them are not.
And these are the easiest calls going 3 to 5 minutes. And then what that does is that makes the pitcher have to warm up by himself some more, because you can't have a pitcher stay on the hill and not throw a baseball for 3 to 5 minutes. That'll take him out of his rhythm. I mean, it's really just adding a lot of unnecessary, I don't know what the word is.
I got a question for you here. I know what you're saying, unnecessary delay to having
effort.
Unnecessary
effort from everyone involved. So let's say that.
Because that hacks off the pitcher and manager.
Exactly.
My question is to you regarding that. Say there's a call that's completely, or it's semi-close, but it wouldn't get overturned. But a manager comes out anyways to stall, to think about challenging just to mess up pitcher's rhythm.
I think that's going
to
happen. Maybe it already has happened.
If that happens in the playoffs, that's going to be a world of hurt for baseball.
Because if you think about it, a pitcher...
rhythm is huge.
Exactly. Let's take a playoff game, for example. Like you said, it's the wild card game. Both teams need one win to move on to the NLDS or ALDS. You have a pitcher. Its base is loaded. After a call, just got... All right, so it's second and third, whatever. So a manager comes out. He wants to... He knows that the play isn't that close, but he wants to get a replay anyway. That pitcher is so amped from that last out and so really in the moment. When you have a manager come out and stall for 3 to 5 minutes like it's taking, that's going to take that pitcher so out of the game.
Oh, I know.
Unless he's like a freak and knows how to focus himself and really stay dialed in. But
I think that's going to throw any pitcher
exactly.
off. That's going to make him want to throw the baseball at the manager.
Yeah, and that next batter that comes up, there's no way that he's going to be able to spot that 94-mile-per-hour fastball at the knees on that next pitch. It's going to take him some time to get that release point back, to get that rhythm back. And yeah. I think that's a huge part of the instant replay that we're going to start seeing in bigger games. Managers are going to implement this strategy to really get the pitchers off their groove.
Off the groove, warm up other pitchers, and that's extra pitches. That's going to take a little bit of effort to keep throwing him in there while he's warming up.
Exactly.
When he should be getting the ball back from the catcher ready to go after this next batter.
I think it's a flawed system.
It is flawed. You're right, partner.
And it needs to be reviewed and changed maybe in the off season, because I think it's too late to make a change for this season since
the
managers are already geared.
They're going to have to just go in with this.
But we'll see where that goes. One more thing I want to talk about before our interviews with the golfers is DeSean Jackson signing a huge deal to be with the Washington Redskins. He's going to be rocking number 11 since RG3 wears his number 10. What are your feelings on DeSean Jackson going to Washington?
I feel that Washington is taking a little bit of a chance because this contract is bigger than what DeSean Jackson could potentially be deserving, because I'm not going to knock him because last year was his best year. I'm not going to say he can't come back and repeat that or even do better. But based off past history, DeSean has been playing with other receivers that can also stretch the field. This time, he is the only guy in Washington that can stretch the field.
Yeah.
And so, it's not going to be, okay, now it's all good and dandy. RG3 can now throw bombs to DeSean whenever he needs to. That won't be the case, because in Philly, you had Macklin, you had Cooper, you had Avant that you could go to deep, and then you had to worry about one of the best running backs in football in LeSean McCoy. And Chip Kelly's system played in perfectly.
That's the one thing I want, exactly.
To DeSean. I'll let you take the floor, but I don't know. It's not going to be like it was in Philly.
Yeah, he had his best year last year because of Chip Kelly. That system is meant for guys like DeSean Jackson who can stretch the field. Riley Cooper did the same thing. Avant and Macklin, they're all receivers who are fast and can stretch the field. Now he's going to a different style offense with the Washington Redskins. They're going to be doing less snaps. It's going to be more of a more slot kind of game, because Pierre Garçon is that guy who can move the chains, go 5 to 6 yards, and get a reception.
DeSean Jackson. That would be a good combo.
Exactly. DeSean Jackson's going to be the only guy on the outside stretching the field. He's going to get double teamed. He's not going to get those catches, which is good for the Redskins, but not so good for DeSean Jackson. And we'll see if he can even stay healthy.
Yeah.
There's been some problems with that in the past, his hamstring, his groin. I mean, DeSean Jackson got his deal that he wanted. A team kicked him off, their team, because they didn't want him because of whatever reasons. Now he's signing a huge deal with the Redskins.
And not to mention, he didn't get along with the coaches in Philly. That's going to be tough, too, getting along with coaches in Washington if things aren't going well. Things were going well for DeSean Jackson in Philadelphia.
And they were a playoff team. Now he's going to the Redskins, where they had a horrible season. RG3 couldn't stay healthy. He's one of those guys who can't stay healthy. And it's going to be interesting to see that those two match up with each other. And they still need a little bit of help on the offensive line. They're getting their running back in Morris, but I don't see them being the same team as the Eagles. Like you said, he's going to a worse team in a worse situation. Yeah, he's getting his money, and it's good for him, but I don't know if the Redskins made the right move. They could have. One thing I wanted to talk about the Redskins is they franchise tagged Arakpo, probably their best defensive player, because they said they didn't have money. And then they're going to give this huge contract to a guy like DeSean Jackson, who has really issues with his personality. Perceived issues with his personality, with gang affiliations. So they're not going to give their money to their best defensive player, and they're going to lie to him and say they don't have money. But now they're going to give a huge contract to DeSean Jackson. That doesn't make sense.
And look at the position ranks. Look where Arakpo ranks in a defensive end backer situation. He's higher than DeSean Jackson in our wide receiver position ranks. Not to mention, like you just said, he is their best defensive player. I agree. Bad move by Washington. Also, if you take a look at college football, where Chip Kelly came from, you notice one thing that will eat teams alive in college football, that is speed. Chip Kelly brought a college football offense to the NFL where he had speed to use. DeSean Jackson thrived in that. Wide receiver screens, constant up-tempo. They would wear out the D, take the top off.
Yeah.
That's perfect for DeSean. Now, no longer. He's going in. Yes, Redskins run some read option, what Chip Kelly does, but this is nothing like Chip Kelly's offense, and you could see a frustrated DeSean Jackson, and I don't think that's what the Redskins were planning on at all. They're thinking that this is a big-time move, and lying to your best defensive player isn't really the best start.
Yeah, and what
I
heard,
rebound.
Just going back to DeSean Jackson, what I heard from multiple sources is that really the only team in or fully in on DeSean Jackson was the Washington Redskins. They said that it might have been his agent's play to really play up the Niners and Raiders as competitors to get him more money. But
that's smart.
I heard that the only team really in on DeSean Jackson was the Washington Redskins. He was asking such a high price.
That's what he was demanding, that type of contract?
Yeah.
I can understand.
So, I mean, there was all these talks about him coming to the Bay if he didn't get a contract with the Redskins at that visit. But I don't think he would have fit. It would have been nice for the Niners.
Me.
Yeah, thank you. It would have been nice for the Niners and Raiders to have him. They could have used DeSean Jackson. But they're not going to pay that type of money for a risk like Jackson.
I agree.
They're both high-character teams or trying to be high-character teams. And I didn't see DeSean Jackson making an impact on either.
I think the only way they would have done it if DeSean was open to rent one-year contract in the Bay, Raiders or Niners, if he would have taken it, he didn't want it. All right, well, we just got Sean and Becky heading into the studio. We're going to have some questions for them. I'm just going to shout out that Sean's wearing a Kaepernick jersey. I got to give him some props for that. This is the Temple of Swan at Radio. Oh,
it's his birthday.
And it's his birthday. Well, you know what? This is going to be the first time on Temple of Swan that we are going to sing Happy Birthday.
We're going to sing,
we're going to sing it. I thought about playing a recording, but we're going to sing it. It could be bad. Our pipes aren't that great. This is radio.dominican.edu. This is the Temple of Swan.
Herself to madness with a silver spoon. tell you, brother, she's been sleeping in the devil's bed. And there's some rumors going round, someone's underground. She can lock you in the night time till your skin turns red.
Back here at radio.dominican.edu on the Temple of Swan with Sean Calgucci and Becky Rivera. But before we get to the interview, it's Sean's 22nd birthday.
Whoop, whoop, whoop.
First off, before we sing,
you're our lead vocalist when we get ready.
I'll start it out. Becky said she'd help me too.
No.
I'm not a good singer at all, so I'm sorry if this is poor.
This is offensive to you.
Michael is singing too.
Oh no, I am. I'm more of the background singer.
No.
Oh, you want me to be a lead as well?
Yeah, both of you.
Okay, we're both leads.
We got it.
Okay. But the thing we do is when we sing, because we've sung a couple songs together.
Yeah, when we're in the apartment, you know, we crank up the tunes.
So what works best for us is when he starts it off, like the first couple words, and then I come in.
Nice.
Yeah.
So that's pretty smooth.
If you could do the honor, it's his 22nd birthday.
Okay, before I sing, I want to know what are you doing tonight? What are your plans? Or can you not share that on the air? Yeah, you're good. Go ahead.
Yeah.
just don't curse.
Bars,
yeah.
I mean,
there you
like,
go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Going
to
dinner. What else, Becky?
We're going to get, we're going to have a good time.
Yeah.
Come on. Let's
I mean, it's 20. It's 22. You got to have a good
time. San Francisco,
yeah, exactly.
You going into the city or are you sticking around here or?
Okay. It's all Sean.
Probably, yeah, sticking around here. We're going to see what happens. Like, let the night just go on, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
There are a couple.
It's gonna be a late night though, for sure.
Oh, a couple parties too.
It is Thursday. It falls on a great day.
Ooh.
Yep, that's true.
Hey.
We should exchange numbers and you guys should join us.
Oh wow.
I would be honored.
We just got invited. I feel so special.
Look at that. We need to do this more often. Invite people on the show, and we get invited to parties.
You know, make Stu invite people on the show.
There we go.
Okay, there you go.
I agree.
Lead us off.
All right. Here we go.
Lead singer, my lead.
Are you ready? Deshaun, 22nd birthday. Here we go. I wish we had some background music.
You called him Deshaun.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sean, not Deshaun.
We were just talking about Deshaun Jackson. You call him Deshaun.
Sean.
Calgucci. All right, I'm going to lead it off.
Okay.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Sean. Happy birthday to you.
Woo!
Thanks, guys.
That was beautiful. Great job.
Yeah, beautiful.
It sounds better on the mic. It does sound better on the mic.
I know. I wonder what it sounds like to the listeners.
Probably
they turn the mute.
They turn
the
down.
All the mirrors everywhere.
all the
windows.
There's like, okay, it's over. Let's turn it back up and see what they have to say. So we do have Sean and Becky on air. They're both golfers. And the first question I have, let's start with Becky, since she is the lady here.
Oh, thank you.
How did you get into golf? I mean, it's an interesting sport, and I don't see too many kids playing it. How'd you get into golf?
So it's actually a kind of interesting story. So my dad turned 50, and I also turned 7, I think, in April of like 2000-whatever.
2000-whatever.
And so he decided that he was an old man and that he should take up golf because my dad and I always played tennis, basketball. We went fishing. We did a lot of, like, active sports, but he kind of wanted to take it easy on his body and started to play golf. And obviously he needed a playing partner. And he forced me into it.
Okay.
I guess.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Father-daughter golf. What about you, Sean?
Well, 21 years ago, my dad placed me in front of the TV. But the thing is, I'm Japanese, and like I don't speak the language. But I was we were watching a Japanese golf swing video, and my dad was like flipping through the channels. And then as soon as he like flipped the channel, I started crying. So then he kept changing it back, and then I keep changing it. So I kept crying until I got the golf channel back on. So okay. Basically, I've been awesome. Doing it ever since.
It's a different stories we're hearing here.
Yeah,
I know.
You were just born to be a golfer, it
exactly.
sounds like. Okay.
You know, his story is way more inspiring than my story. I was forced into it.
He's called the Asian Tiger Woods. I mean.
Oh, my gosh. Tiger Woods is Asian.
That's true.
I didn't even know that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I knew that. Oh. See, I feel a little bit brighter than
yeah, you got a little more golf balls. What I want to know is, first off, two questions. What's going through your mind when you're about to tee off, and if it doesn't go your way, how frustrating does it get?
Yeah, because golf's a frustrating sport.
You have to have so much concentration. I want to know what's going through your head when you're about to putt or about to tee off for a hole, especially if it's a big shot. I'll start with Sean, or whoever wants to take it.
So the first tee is always the worst.
Okay.
I think, for me, especially if you've never played with the people before. So basically what I'm thinking about is don't shank it, look cool, don't mess up, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree with Becky, the first tee and unfortunately the last putt, those are always like the ones that are the toughest on you, so you have to pretty much just stay focused, relax, like hope it goes straight or goes in the hole. I mean, whatever happens, but you can't be too mad at yourself. I mean, sometimes it's easy to get mad at yourself, but you just have to not let it get to you, really.
I'm a very impatient person, too, so I get frustrated really easily. So
you got to keep your composure.
Oh, yeah, it's really hard.
Tough?
It's tough.
Where do you guys golf around here? I don't know the area too well. Where are the courses that you guys like to golf at?
Peacock Gap, which is about 10 minutes away. That's in San Rafael. We also golf at Richmond Country Club in Richmond. And we golf at San Geronimo in Fairfax and Meadow Club in Fairfax. So we have a pretty wide variety of golf courses around here.
And how are you doing so far?
Team's doing well. I mean, like, we haven't had the best season yet, but we almost won a tournament. I mean, it came down to two strokes out of 902, two overall. So we were really close to winning that tournament. I mean, it was about to be our first win, so... It's been going really well so far, and we got a lot of really good players, so I'm liking it so far.
I think the team has been its best this year.
I agree.
You guys have some solid players, and Gary's really turned the coach has really turned the
program around.
Yeah, program around, exactly.
Yeah, we were reading articles on the website, on Dominican's website, about the golf team and how you guys are so young. You're one of the
team.
One of the oldest on the team, one of the few upperclassmen, and you guys are really having your best season yet as a D2 golf team. What's it like having so many young golfers on this team who are actually pretty good in contributing to your squad?
I think it's great. We got a whole lot of potential to go out there and win tournaments or to keep that mindset. I mean, they're only going to get better from here on, so it's really exciting to see that.
Being one of those seniors, do a lot of those golfers look up to you?
I would hope so. I mean, because there's one other senior, but I mean, like, just being that everyone else is a freshman, a sophomore, I mean, like, right now as a team captain, I mean, myself and Joey Saad, the other team captain, like, we try to set the best examples we can, so it's just, we do what we can, and I mean, hope that we set the right example and are good leaders.
Who's the other senior?
Forbes Collins.
He's not a senior.
No, he's, I think he's a freshman.
Oh. No, he's
I'm kidding. Forbes Collins is other senior.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So you have two upperclassmen and the rest are underclassmen?
Yeah.
Okay. Back to you, Becky. Now, you're not competing with the women's golf team, but do you find yourself still playing golf for fun or hitting the links just because?
Not really. So I work, and then I'm also in school, and I'm taking like a full load, and that's kind of been what's happened, you know, for a while. So I don't really have time. And then I kind of just get tired of golf because I work at a golf store, so I'm around all these golfers.
It plays its toll after a while.
Yeah.
It takes its toll.
Exactly.
So since you play golf, do you like to watch golf?
Becky's shaking sometimes her head no. I mean, it depends. Like, it depends on the tournament. I mean, the Masters, which is coming up this upcoming week, I mean, that's always a fun one to watch, like the big ones. But ultimately, I mean, you can't really sit there and watch for like 4 hours a day. It gets kind of boring, but at the same time, it's enjoyable to like kind of follow it at certain times.
So it's a lot different when you're on the course playing.
Exactly.
You're in a lot more of the zone.
It's definitely a lot different.
It is fun to watch the golfers mess up.
Really?
Yeah. Like, you if like they whiff it, yeah, uh-huh. or they shank it, it's like, oh, I do that too.
I can relate.
Yeah, exactly.
We've had a couple of basketball players on here talking about their practice schedule, how they have to get up at 5:45 and do practice at 6 in the morning. What's your guys' practice schedule like? Because you don't practice on campus. So what's your guys' practice schedule like?
Usually, like, pretty much for me, personally, like, we pretty much wake up at 6 a.m. Then we end up having to drive, like, another half hour, 45 minutes. So we end up having practice around, like, 7:30 or 8 o'clock and ends up going till 12. And then it's pretty much, like, just about every day, and if we're not like having a scheduled practice, then we go out on our own and we practice like just like any other sport. You got to put a lot of time and effort into it, so it's time consuming.
I bet. I want to know about Becky. What got you out of golf?
So I stopped playing for the team because I'm a management, or I'm a business administration major, and then I'm also pre-med as well. So
you really.
Yeah, I'm really involved. Packed. Yeah, and when the new coach, Gary, came on, he really wanted to turn the program around like we talked about. So he had made our practice schedules a lot more rigorous, and I couldn't handle it. And
it's a full load.
Yeah, yeah. And I had to talk with like my parents about it, and basically, you know, I thought that it would be best to just focus on school. It was a really hard decision to make because it's really fun to play on a team and, you know, connect with other golfers. And
you miss it?
Yes and no. I didn't really like practicing.
Yeah.
But I liked the team aspect.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Now, I want to get into how you guys came to Dominican, since it is such a small school and not too many people know about it. So, Becky, how did you get either recruited, or how did you know about Dominican? How did you get to come here to this campus in San Rafael?
So, there was someone that came to my high school. I'm from Sacramento, and I went to an all-girls Catholic school. So there was some lady that came, and like a representative, and she talked about it. And then I just applied, and I visited it, and I really liked it because the campus is really beautiful. We were like 11th, ranked 11th in the beautiful.
Yeah, I saw that article, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
In California.
Yeah, exactly. And I just liked the aspect of, you know, how it doesn't feel like a college campus. It feels like a neighborhood, or it just feels like home. So, that's why I chose Dominican.
For me, I was pretty much just looking at, like, playing golf for college, and I had several other options, but I really, like, when it came down to it, I came to Dominican, fell in love with the campus, and I liked the program. And I'd been recruited by our previous coach, Marsha O'Neill, and basically, when I came here, I knew there was no going back, so I chose Dominican, wanted to come play golf here, so that's how I've ended up.
I actually didn't want to play golf at all.
Oh, really?
But I got recruited by a guy that graduated already, Kevin Santos. He made me play.
He forced you to play.
Just like my dad.
Yeah, exactly. You just seem like you're forced into golf.
It's just my lot in life.
I'll go to Sean here. Coming here as a freshman and now being a senior, how has your game progressed?
It's come a long ways, honestly. I mean, like, before, like, having a team that struggled, it was hard to, like, stay motivated, I'll admit that. But, I mean, like, once these guys really came around, the program had a big turnaround. There was just a lot more incentive to keep, like, going at it. And, like, I basically, like, the game's come a long ways. And attitude-wise, you mature and, like, you learn a lot, like, over the 4 years. I feel like that's been a huge progression. So I mean, the game's definitely come a long way since the last 3 years. I mean, when I was a freshman, and the team's come a long way too. So it's been like a big change.
What, now, once you graduate, we heard Becky say that she might not want to golf, or maybe on her free time might hit the links. But you, on the other hand, you sound like you might still keep in golfing. Would you be interested in still trying to golf maybe every week or every 2 weeks? What's your plan once you graduate in terms of golfing?
I plan on trying to play every weekend. I mean, like, I play over at the Olympic Club down in San Francisco. So, I mean, I'd like to just keep playing as much as I can and pretty much play until I die. So
there you go.
That's like the honest truth, I guess.
Yeah, you could play golf till you can't walk anymore, I feel like.
Exactly.
But golf is one of those sports, just like running. As long as you're able to move a little bit, you could still join in the sport, which I think that's a good thing about golf.
Definitely.
What's it like at that Olympic Club? It's pretty nice.
Yeah, it's pretty spectacular. I mean, we had the U.S. Open, so we had the best in the world come out there. And, I mean, I was there for that. And then being able to go out on that same course and, like, try to compete and knowing that, like, Tiger Woods was walking along here playing this golf course, like, it's something, it's not even reality sometimes. I mean,
yeah,
it's pretty special.
Now, Becky, you're a senior, so close to graduation.
Yes.
Are you excited for this final stretch?
Didn't we talk about this earlier?
Well, I don't want to know what you're doing after. I'm just saying, are you excited?
Okay, good.
Yeah, I'm not going to get into that question.
it's kind of like a bittersweet feeling, you know? Like, the past 3 years, I've wanted to leave this place so badly, and now I don't want to leave at all. But, yeah, I mean, I'm excited to see what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I guess.
See, I'm not going to ask you what exactly you want to do because I don't think anyone's known that on this show yet.
Oh, my gosh.
But I just want to know if you're excited to graduate because I feel like school, I mean, you probably still have more school because you said you want to be pre-med.
Yes. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Okay, that's all you need to hear. Sean, are you excited to be a senior?
I'm excited, but at the same time, I don't want to leave this place. So I'm going to consider coming back to San Rafael after college. But like at the same time, I mean, you have to go where the jobs are, but I've loved this, loved the last 4 years, and senior year has been the best of all of them so far, so I can't complain. I mean, it's been great.
Yeah, I was going to ask you guys, are you sad leaving behind some friends?
Of course, definitely.
Yeah, I hang out with all of the golfers, and they're all young, like you said, and it's going to be really different not hanging out with them all the time.
Yeah, I mean, same thing, like, being friends with the golfers, and then also, people always kind of joke that I know, like, the entire school, which in some ways is kind of true.
He does.
But at the same time...
it's not a joke. Definitely not a joke.
But at the same time, I mean, it's going to be hard to leave it, because, I mean, you know, you build so many, like, great friendships, and, like, you get to know people really well, so, I mean, it'll be interesting what, like, happens in the next couple months, so we'll see what happens.
Because, yeah, this is our first year, and we've loved it. You guys have been here for all four. Have you just been completely developed in this community, the student community?
I would say so. I mean, like, I've pretty much, like, I've gotten to know most of the people. I mean, I've tried to get out as much as I could, be a part of the golf team. I mean, growing up with, like, all these other seniors, you get to know everyone, and then having all the other incoming classes, you get to meet so many people. So I'd say it's been pretty, like, gotten pretty involved, I guess.
Successful.
Yeah.
College career.
I've not been as involved as Sean. I'm not as popular as he is.
Sounds like that's a hard thing to do, though. I don't know if anyone's as popular as
him. Man.
Sean's on a level. I've gotten close to my teachers, networking. But
that's a big thing,
yeah,
right there.
Oh yeah, yeah. But yeah, I like this community. It's a good community. We're all kind of close.
Now, Sean, you guys have had, I think, 3 tournaments so far. What has been the most memorable moment from those first 3 tournaments? Because I think the only one left is the conference tournament, right? The conference championship.
Yeah, that's correct.
So what's been the most memorable moment from those first 3 tournaments?
Well, definitely going out, and, I mean, we played a tournament at Hidden Brook Golf Club in Vallejo, and we had a lot of the top-ranked teams in the nation. Like, we had Sonoma State, which was a past national champion about 3 or 4 years ago. And a lot of teams that we didn't know we were necessarily going to be able to beat, we went out and beat them. We almost won the entire tournament, like I said earlier. I mean, came down to 2 strokes out of 904, so we came really close to, like, getting our first win. But, I mean, second place was great, and it's been our best finish in my 4 years here, so that was exciting to see.
So when you depart, what's going to be left with your teammates? You see like them growing and this team continue to get better?
Oh, definitely. I mean, we're going to have a bunch of incoming recruits. I think we'll have a lot of the guys that we have now. They're just going to continue getting a lot better because I see so much potential. I mean, I feel like this team is going to be like competing in the national championships like not too long from now. I mean,
wow.
It's a great team.
Now, just Becky, exciting. You used to play for the women's golf team here. Do you have any outlook for them this season and looking forward because they do have the same coach?
Yeah, Gary's been working really hard at recruiting good golfers, fresh talent. And, I mean, I think that the women's team is good. Maybe just needs maybe a couple more years, and they'll be as good as the men's team, if not better.
Yeah, that's what our coach was saying. I mean, he's got a couple really good players coming in this next year, and I mean, he was saying that he thinks they could just be as good as us, I mean, within a year or two.
Yeah.
And I got one final question for you. So golf, we watch on television, it's just an individual sport, but now when you golf at a college, it's a team sport,
yes,
correct?
Yes.
So is there like a special, you guys have like any specialties? Like one guy's a really, really good putter, one guy's a great driver, or has everyone just kind of got a well-rounded game?
I mean, everyone's pretty much got a like good, well-rounded game. You couldn't really have gotten here without it, but I mean, we got Forbes who hits it longer than everybody on the team. We got Drew who's got great wedges, and I mean, we've all like got different great characteristics that carry us a long ways, and I mean, there's no player that, I mean, that stands out the most, I guess, but like Pomi Milton, he's gone out and like had a really great year this year, and he's like recorded a lot more birdies than pretty much anybody else in any of the other tournaments. So, I mean, everybody's got really a lot of strengths in their game, so it's exciting, I guess.
Right on.
That's all I have for you guys. Have anything else to add? It is your birthday today. Do you have any shout outs or anything to people who are listening on air?
Not particularly. I don't really know who's listening, but I hope a lot of them are.
I mean, I knew you were popular, so I was just testing it, seeing if you wanted to get
it. Maybe our listeners just skyrocketed because
exactly.
You got shot
on
the show.
I think our ratings just went up because I hope you told everyone. You're like, hey, I listened to us. But yeah, I want to thank you guys for coming on. We learned a lot about golf.
Thank you.
Just in this first 15 minutes of talking with you, so thank you. Even if you were forced onto here, we appreciate it.
And Thanks, Stu.
We hope to have you back on air. And I just want to thank you and happy birthday again to you.
Thank you. Appreciate
happy
it.
Becky,
thank
have a great
you
night, Sean.
And thanks. We'll be right back with some picks for baseball and at radio.dominican.edu.
was blown away. Busy disappearing till I saw your face. In the stratosphere, and now I can't escape. The force field that we're in got me light years away. So out of space, without a trace. Baby, we're gone, baby, we're gone, come on. Tires, let's get out of here. And you make it brighter when we can't see the road. Where does this go? God only knows. But baby, we're gone. Baby, we're gone. Come on.
Radio.dominican.edu. You're listening to the Temple of Swan, and we're going to conclude our show with some baseball picks. Temple and Swan, get after it on the MLB.
We're continuing our MLB theme here. MLB, I liked it last time.
I did too. I'm always watching the games now to make sure, keeping track. All right. Did the Rangers beat the Phillies? I'm just kidding. That's not who they played.
They did. They did, though. In the first series, the interleague series, because there's always going to be one now every week.
Yeah.
Because the Houston Astros moving over to the AL West. But so, yeah, you were watching the games, and it's going to be a steady competition throughout the rest of the semester, and I got to catch up. I'm only down one, so anything
on
can happen.
My tail.
You give us the first game.
All right. Braves at Nationals. The starter's going to be Mr. Hale. for the Braves. And for the Nationals, they don't have a starter. They did not announce one yet. So we're going to have to pick this game with only knowing that Hale's going for the Braves.
I'm going to go with the Nationals just because they're at home.
TBD.
They're pitching TBD, who's usually their best pitcher. So TBD.
Maybe it's Tink.
It's Tink. TBD's about to come out and get a win. How about yourself on this one?
I don't know much about Hale at all, and I have a feeling if all of a sudden a roster spot gets dropped and it's Zimmerman, or if it's Gonzalez or Strasburg, and they just haven't been penciled in, and all of a sudden I pick the Braves, I'd feel pretty dumb. So I'm going to agree with you and go with the Nationals.
There you go. Next game is the Orioles traveling to Detroit to take on the Tigers. Gio. I don't know why they... Oh, no, it's not Gio Gonzalez. I'm thinking of the Nationals TBDD there. Gonzalez against Sanchez.
Orioles haven't shown that they're the team that they were last year. Tigers know how to win at home. Scherzer's been dominant. We saw that yesterday. Verlander looks good. I think Sanchez continues. I'm going to take the Tigers over.
I hate agreeing with you on these picks, but
we got a lot.
I'm gonna take the Tigers as well, playing at home. Anibal Sanchez gets it done. Next game is the Milwaukee Brewers against the Bostonian Red Sox. Our boy Estrada is on the hill. Miguel Estrada taking on Jake Peavy for the Red Sox.
I like the pitching matchup here for the Brewers, but coming Red Sox first series at home, back World Series champs. I'm going to take the Sox.
I'm going to take the Brewers just because our fantasy pitcher is on the hill.
And I like it.
Oh, no, you said Brewers too.
I said Sox.
Oh, okay. I don't know why I'm so messed up right now.
No, you're good.
I'm going to say Estrada on the hill. He was my sleeper pick this year, and I think he had a very good spring. I think he's a very good pitcher. Marco Estrada gets it done against the Red Sox.
7 innings pitch, 1 in a run, 5 Ks. We're good. Chalk up the W for Estrada.
9 innings, no runs, no hits.
Oh, we'd love that. Throw the no-no. Okay, next game. Phillies at the Cubbies. This is going to be a good one. Hernandez taking on Wood. Who do you got?
I'm going to take the Cubs.
Ooh.
The Cubs are looking actually pretty decent right now. Which I said they're going to make the playoffs in our first show, so I'm going to stick to that, and I'm going to pick the Cubs every time we come in here. Cubs get done. How about you?
Just because we got Bono Fassio on our team, I'm taking the Cubbies. I like Wood. I'm going to agree with you there.
Next pick, the Twins versus the Indians. We have Pelfrey taking on Salazar. And most of these pitchers are fives or four guys, so we haven't seen too much of them throughout their career yet. But for here, I'm going to have to go with the Indians. I think the Indians looked decent enough against the A's to warrant this pick. The Twins are still a cellar dweller in the AL, so I'm going to take the Indians.
You hit it on the knob. Twins are in the cellar. They struggled with the White Sox. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to agree with you. I got to go Indians.
So far, we've disagreed on one. Next game is the D-backs, who are 1-5 against the Colorado Rockies, who are 1-3. 1-3 because it's a four-game series. 1-3. Pitchers for that are Delgado versus Nicasio. I can never say his name right. Juan Nicasio, or you know how to pronounce his name. Who are you taking in that one?
I'm going to go Rockies. I'm going to take the home team. I'm going to say Nicasio gets it done.
I'm going to go with the D-backs just because I think Delgado is a very underrated pitcher, and I think the D-backs, who are at 1-5, need to snap back, and them traveling, maybe getting on the road to go to Colorado, hitter-friendly park, I think they get done.
Did he come from Atlanta?
Yeah.
Okay. Next game on the slate, White Sox at the Royals. Johnson taking on Guthrie. Who you got in this one?
The Royals are a very good team. Jeremy Guthrie's a good pitcher. I'm taking the Royals.
I like the Royals too. I'm going Royals over White Sox.
In the next game, it is rivalry weekend in LA. Giants, Dodgers, Vogelsong, Ryu. Ryu's trying to make his third third game without giving up a run. He's already gone 17 innings, no runs. He's coming against the Giants. What's your take on this?
I'm just doing this from a completely non-biased standpoint, and I don't like Vogie's odds going against Ryu in this game. I hate to do it, but picking it, I'm going to say if I had to pick it, I'd pick the Dodgers to win.
Yeah, I picked the Dodgers as well. Ryu's pretty dominant right now. And that's all really I have to say about that. I think the Giants are hitting well enough to where they'll make it a good game. But Vogelsong had a rough spring like we talked about in the opener. And I think he struggles a little bit against the Dodgers.
This is my favorite series here. Cardinals at Pirates. Shelby Miller taking on Garrett Cole. Cole coming off a good rookie season. Who are you taking? This is a good one. This is tough.
Garrett Cole's a very good pitcher, and so is Shelby Miller. The Cardinals went to play the Reds in this weekend series. They're in the final game of that, and I think it probably ended by the time we've done this show. And then they have to go over to the Pirates.
Cards by one.
Oh, see, the Cardinals are a very good team, and I'm going to take Shelby Miller beating Cole in the 7:05 game.
Give me the P-Rats. They probably hate that I call them that, but I'm going to take Garrett Cole and the Pirates.
Garrett Cole is a good pitcher ever since he was called up, and he has a very live fastball. That's a good pick. Next game is the Yankees versus the Blue Jays. Tanaka making his USA debut against McGowan for the Blue Jays.
Tanaka deals. I'm taking the Yanks.
Blue Jays win 2-1. Tanaka gets his first loss on American soil. Go Blue Jays.
American soil in Canada.
That's so funny. I just wanted to say it because he's coming to America to pitch, and then what are the odds?
First loss on the Canadian soil.
He's in Canada. That was unfortunate luck for Mr. Temple. Take it.
All right, next game. We have the Reds going on the road to take on the Mets. And It looks favorable for one side.
I'm going Reds, Mike Leake on the hill. That's all I have to say.
I agree. I'm going to go Cincy as well. I think that they're locked in this year. But shout out. Come on, Billy Hamilton.
Get on base.
You're the leadoff hitter. Get on base. You got to get on base, kid. You're older than me, but get on base, kid.
Next game is Padres versus Marlins. We have Drew Stoltz going against Kohler for the Marlins. Never heard of Kohler.
I haven't heard of him either. Stoltz can deal for the Pods. Miami has looked really good at home. I'm going to take Miami.
I'm going to take Miami as well. Like you said, Miami's looking good only four games into the season. I think they get it done. Next time we do these picks, I'm going to try to get the aces because we did just the Friday games. And
we're getting
these
the
are
bottom
like
half
mostly
of it.
Five guys. Yeah. So, but we'll make our adjustments.
That's fine, yeah.
We still have a bunch.
Mixing it up.
Exactly. Next game, Rangers, Rays, Saunders against Odorizzi. For the Rays.
I think Saunders goes into Tampa and he gets shelled in the Tampa crowd that has a record sellout of 7,000 people. And I'm saying that because Temple and I tuned into MLB Network. Second game of the season. Second game.
It's a night game, not a day
game. Night game. Tampa Bay taking on the Toronto Blue Jays. You'd think that they're going to support after they got a victory. And you have 5,000 people in the stands. If you've ever been to a AAA ball game, I'm going to compare it to the River Cats game. There are more people at the River Cats game than a Tampa Bay Ray game.
Yeah, I think there are more people at the San Jose Giants game, which isn't even AAA, than what I saw at that Rays game we were watching. And they have some of the coolest promotions, some of the coolest giveaways. They have a great team.
That's what I don't get. They have a great team with one of the best managers in baseball. Yet we see a panorama down the first base line of maybe 200 people.
At max. That's max. 200 max. That's embarrassing. I'm going to go with the Rays. I like your prediction in front of 7,000, a record seller. 7,000 at the Trop.
At the Trop.
Next game is the Angels and the AL West leading. Well, they're actually, if you want to say they're in second because they're 2-0 and
technicalities.
And the Mariners are 3-0.
Technicalities.
But the Astros are atop of the division as we speak. Angels, Astros, Richards versus Harrell.
I'm going to take the Angels here. I'm going to say Stros come down to life against this one, and I'm a huge fan of Mike Trout. That's probably why I'm taking this pick.
I'm going to take the Astros just because they're at home, and I don't like the Angels. I think they're overrated this year, just like they were last year and the year before and the year before and the year before. Even in 2002, they were overrated. I'm just kidding.
Don't bring up that 2002 series, please. I wish we could call him overrated. Dang it, Levon Hernandez.
Okay. Levon Hernandez, man. The ageless wonder.
Ah, okay. Last game. Night game. Mariners on the road at O.co. Temple and I thought about taking a trip out to O.co and boycotting the show. But we thought that'd be an absolutely terrible idea. It's Young versus Straley. I already know who Temple's going to take. Let's go, Albert!
Yeah, I'm taking Dan Straley. If he keeps the ball in the yard, A's should win. I expect them to take these first two games with Chavez, then Straley. And then the Malone and Hernandez game, I think that's going to be a tough one to take.
There goes Felix with his win, and then maybe A's can take three
and
out of
Erasmo
four.
Ramirez is a pretty good number two for the Mariners. So I think those second two games will be tough for the A's, but they've got to win this first game with Chavez, and I think they have the favorable matchup with Straley against Young in the second matchup. I think they get it done. How about you?
I agree. I'm on O.co. I think the A's get it done. We got Zombie Nation in the background. Mike Mixon on the DJ. A's are about to get underway here in about 25 minutes, but I'm going to take the A's for this game, as well as I'm going to pick the A's winning tonight as well.
Oh, you're going? We're even picking tonight?
I'm just going to throw it out there.
I think the Giants win today, and they're going to win by...
I'd bet money on that, probably.
I think they're going to win by a Pagan homer. I think that's going to be the telltale in the game for some reason.
Get your tickets ready, Vegas, because Temple's the sidekick.
And then in the A's game, I think they do win today. Like I said, Chavez is a better pitcher than people think. I think he gets it done.
When I saw... Well, we both saw him deal at AT&T Park. He shut down the Giants. Was it a one-hitter or he took a no-hitter?
I think it was a one-hitter.
A one-hitter?
Yeah, he's a good pitcher.
So we'll see what happens tonight.
Be ready, America. This is the Temple of Swan. We want to thank you for listening. We will be back next Thursday with more interviews, more amazing baseball talk, probably some football talk and some Warriors talk as they're looking to round up their season. This is the Temple of Swan at radio.dominican.edu.
Good night.
Thank you.